kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for listening to the SML podcast. My name is Joe Camasismasia, and today we're going to be talking about all kinds of amazing gaming goodness. I hope everyone has a great time. Roll that theme music.
Should we start the show for real?
Nah, let's just make fun of.
We just keep talking, making fun of dialects today.
Yeah,
we could.
Let's kick it.
That reminds me. I made a post the other day on Facebook, completely unrelated to anything, but it was funny and it's kind of related to this topic. But I made a post that apparently people pronounce Appalachian wrong, and it said if you pronounce it Appalachia, I'll throw an apple at you. And I literally had my notifications blowing up all day. People that don't talk to me for years are all of a sudden like, wait a second, have we been saying this wrong? And I'm like, fucking yes.
You know what? I had this discussion a while back when I was still living in North Carolina, and we looked it up, and it turns out we were all saying it wrong, according to what Webster thinks it should be. What do you say?
We say Appalachia.
Okay.
Or no, Appalachia. Sorry, Appalachia is the one that will get you in trouble, and I'm.
Okay, so Appalachian is what I've always Appalachian is what I've always said. But we looked it up, and apparently it is Appalachian, and everyone says it wrong.
People say fuck that you. Too, you're all wrong then.
But I don't think Webster's is right on this
one. I mean, I don't know. I assume that's Native American, so I have. It turns out Webster, no one actually knows.
Because of the phonetic aspect of it, that they're pronouncing it that way. It's kind of like when people say Louisville or Louisville, and it's Louisville.
Louisville.
It sounds like you got a mouthful of shit, but that's it's Louisville.
Here, and let me take this paper towel and wada up and put it.
Louisville. Louisville. You got it. There you go. Talking. Good job.
Louisville.
Louisville.
On that note, what's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe. As you can tell, we are joined by the wonderful Grant Henry. Grant, how are you doing?
I'm good.
Oh, cool. You're here, too. I should mention that.
How come you never say I'm wonderful?
Yeah, hit or miss.
Okay. Speaking of things, the fucking best and you're just jelly of it.
It's because you make fun of me for saying Appalachian.
I will throw an apple at you.
Good. Do it. I'm hungry. I didn't get to eat dinner yet tonight. Here's another word that I always say wrong, and I don't care. I will continue to say it wrong. Ryu from Street Fighter. You could tell me it's Ryu all you want. I don't give a fuck what you tell me. His name is Ryu.
Is it Ryu?
Yes.
Wow.
I don't know. Ryu. That's why? Ry. I don't know. I don't get it.
Are you going to tell me that character from Death Note is Ryuk and not Ryuk?
I don't know. I don't watch Death Note.
Is it Ryuk? I don't either. I've just only ever seen it spelled, so I just assume it's Ryuk, and I have a feeling I'm going to be told I'm wrong, or we're going to lose, one of the three listeners we have.
Going to alienate everyone.
This doesn't pronounce it right. Bye!
So, Grant, how are you doing?
Good.
What's new in Stemageville?
Oh, you know.
Helpful.
Oh, things are cool, man. I put a record out this week that I'm excited about.
Tell us about it.
I did the music for the retro levels of Runner 3, which is a Switch/PC game coming out here in a couple weeks. And I'm pumped to be able to put it out because I've been sitting on it for a while. You know what? You know what, Joe? When you make music for other people, you can't just turn around and put it out. You know, you can't just finish something and then immediately post it, which is what I'm more used to.
Yeah,
you have to sit on things for a while. So when you're finally able to put something out there, it's quite the catharsis. It's like, ugh, now it's out of my hands. I can't touch it anymore. I can move on to the next thing. You know what I mean? So,
well, you're allowed to release anything you ever do for me, even though it's all really, really stupid stuff.
What now? Oh God, of course. Well, no, I you know what? At this point, I think we're close to an EP of SML material, right?
Pretty close to it,
you know,
because you've done Christmas mixes of songs. You've done our theme song once. You did the Christmas version of said theme song, and then of course the legendary Ball Squad.
The Ball Squad. I think we're overdue for another song. Just got to figure out what it's going to be.
Just redo Ball Squad, but the lyrics instead of Ball Squad are just Joe Cam. All the rest of the lyrics are exactly the same.
Or we'll be like Ball Squad, except for Williams. Ball Squad, you know.
That's a good segue into some of the news of the week. Obviously, when you're here, we have to talk pinball stuff.
True.
Farsight Studios is going to be do a lot of altering with the Pinball Arcade very soon. Grant, do you want to tell us about this news since you're the one who told me about it originally?
Sure. It's making bigger waves than I even thought it would. Like it's getting main page reporting from just about everybody, which I think is good because it obviously brings awareness to Pinball Arcade. But What's happened is that Williams or whoever owns like WMS or whatever, whoever owns the licenses for the Williams Bally Table collection that Pinball Arcade publishes, because Pinball Arcade does actual reproductions of machines and has to license everything. That company is pulling their license from Pinball Arcade. So come the end of June, that is the last time for you to buy any Williams tables for Pinball Arcade. Which is a pretty big deal because I think it's that comprises maybe 2/3 of their collection, perhaps.
Yeah, it's a huge number. Now, did they pull the license or are they just not renewing it?
They are not renewing it, but they are not renewing it. So they're not like, you know what? I don't know specifics, but I just know that they are not, they are no longer going to be able to have that license after June 30th.
Yeah.
There's been some talk online about who actually owns those, the WMS brand and those licenses, because it's sort of changed hands. I think there's a company that makes gambling machines that did own it. Maybe that's not that way anymore. Maybe there's someone that's wanting to actually build, someone that wants to take advantage of those licenses. Maybe they're dipping their toe into Williams Creations with another developer. I mean, who knows? It could be any number of things. Or maybe that just that they don't feel like it's an important enough license to keep active. You know, they've had those tables, they've been selling those tables for a long time. If the tail's not that big and they're not selling a lot anymore, maybe they don't want to deal with it anymore. I don't know. It really does suck though.
I don't know. I did the math. Over 60 tables are going to be leaving Pinball Arcade, leaving only, what was it, like 34, something like that?
Yeah, something like that.
Which is an insane chunk of content that is gone. Now, the good news is if you already own the tables, nothing changes. You still have access to them. You still get to play them. Farsight said they're still going to maintain them and update them when needed. And all the remaining tables are going to be repackaged in different table bundles or different offerings, whatever they're going to do. But yeah, like as you said, people have until June 30th to decide whether or not they want to grab them. So shit or get off the pot, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the craziest part about it is that, per their agreement, they are unable to discount the tables prior to June 30th. So they can't have like a fire sale.
Yeah. And, you can't buy them all for a buck each or anything.
Yeah. Or like even just cheaper than they are. I think the table packs are around $20 a piece, $25 a piece, maybe.
Table for packs the seasons. I know the most recent ones are $29.99. Earlier ones might be cheaper, but I know I was looking at season 6 and 7, and those are $30 each.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, come the Steam sales, they normally drop pretty substantially in price, but I wonder if they're going to be exempt from that, because you know, Steam sales coming up this summer, and it likely hits in June. But if they can't do that, that's just too bad. It would be a great way to get people to. You know, people haven't had a lot of time to play that game on Switch because it just came out on Switch like a month and a half ago.
How much content is on the Switch version? Because I'm going to guess you have it because you own everything pinball related.
Well, I don't have. No, I don't. I don't own all the tables on there because I just haven't had the money to drop to.
Well,
to
no, get I meant that you have the game, and if anything, you know which seasons are there.
I believe it is all there. I believe everything is there. including the latest season. So, but I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure that it's all updated.
Yeah, because I know on Xbox we have season 7 they're working on now. I think there's 5 or 6 tables from season 7 that are available right now. My question is, when if the end of June comes and all of the season 7 tables aren't out yet on Xbox, or if they're not out on whatever platform still need them, what happens then?
Oh, yeah, I have no idea. I mean, if you bought those tables, you own those tables, right? Like, you've paid for them. It's the equivalent of paying pre-ordering something, right? You've paid for the full season, and if there's none available, I can only assume they will continue to roll those out so everyone has their delivered tables that they've bought ahead of time, right? I mean, that just makes logical sense.
I would hope so, but you never know. Licensing is a motherfucker. That is something that we have learned very much so in all the chats with Harmonix we've had over the years. Licensing is as big a bitch as there can be in the video game industry.
It is. I just figure, like, if they can't sell the tables anymore, if you have already bought the table, and it's just up to whether or not Farsight can get them to you, you know, like, there's no more money exchanging hands at that point. No. So I would hope that people get their tables. It's sad because they've been a little slow getting these out to, they haven't been firm dates of when tables will come to some of this some of the platforms, and that's been sort of a ding against them in the way they roll out their stuff.
Well, they're also releasing these tables on how many different platforms?
A lot of them.
Yeah, but it's still shitty, shitty news for pinball fans. Are you going to end up buying everything on the Switch before the end of June?
I'm trying to decide. Like, I'm building that little machine, but the way that the Switch is set up, it doesn't allow for analog nudging anyway. So I think, like, I don't know if they will be updating the system to allow me to play the machines I want to play and the way I want to play anyway on my little thing I'm building. So I may not snag them all, because it would probably run me, like, what's that, like 120 or 30 or 40 or 50 bucks to amass them all. And I already own them all on PC. So maybe I'll just enjoy Pinball Arcade on PC. And then I'll keep my, and I'll just do the pinball effects stuff on Switch.
You should hit up Mike and be like, hey, before they're all gone, do you have any codes laying around?
It'd be nice, but as you know, like, Switch codes are harder to come by anyway. Like, it may be a weird situation. Who knows? I mean, so, and given the situation they're in, he probably isn't in a... I bet he's getting tagged by a whole lot of people for getting, you know... I bet they're getting tagged by just about everybody. I bet Mike's a really busy guy right now.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you guess?
I would imagine that he's got a lot going on right now.
Yeah, being the community dude, so.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully they see a nice bump in sales that'll carry them for a while. There was no announcements of layoffs or anything, and they're going to they're going to pound into the new season, releasing some of the some Stern stuff and some new stuff too, so we'll see what happens.
I hope we end up seeing more Sega stuff as well.
Me too. Sega's got some great tables.
Yeah. Man, speaking of the Switch, though, did you guys hear that the Switch Online news was all revealed this past week?
No, was it?
Yeah, all the Nintendo Switch Online service has been unveiled, as along with all the pricing and all this other fun stuff. First off, a year membership is going to be $20, which isn't that bad at all. 3 months is going to be 8 and 1 month is going to be 4. They're also offering a family membership for $34.99. And it says, with a family membership, up to 8 Nintendo account holders will be able to use the Nintendo Switch Online service even on different systems. So it sounds like some friends could get together and pull their money.
That's a cool way to handle it. I mean, thinking about it, if I wanted to play... you know, my brother has a Switch. He doesn't play it a ton, but if we want to play Mario Kart together, I don't think he'll want to pay for a year of this stuff to just play Mario on a cart on occasion.
Yeah.
But if we're splitting it, it's a pretty dope deal.
Yeah.
You know?
So me, you, your brother, who else?
Cole.
She doesn't have one.
I don't have a Switch.
You can still split the price with us, though.
Yeah. It'll
be great. I was actually sitting here thinking, and I was like, okay, well, it seems all well and good, but then I was like, boy, I hope Microsoft doesn't get that idea to charge more for the family package, because as it is right now, we can have 8 accounts on our account on one sharing gold as a family. On different consoles.
Yeah, but that's just on one console. That's not across 8 different consoles. Not.
We have 2 different consoles.
Yeah, one's your home console and the other is the one you log into.
And they can, like, Evelyn's account can play on it on live. without any stipulations from it, without me signed in or anything.
On the home console?
No, on the other console.
How?
Because she's listed as a family member.
Interesting.
Yeah. There's on your Microsoft account, you can add family. And we have four accounts on ours under family. Hmm. And they all have access to gold. Gold games.
Well,
gold,
that's cool.
Live services.
See, and as someone pay, who basically just has the pay. One account, I never get to experience all this stuff.
Yeah, and we just, like, she has her Xbox in her room, and I have my S in the living room. And then there's the 360 in the other two girls' room. And they can all access online play. Hmm. And we only pay one. Well, we don't even pay. I want a code for your Xbox.
Oh, but, God. So you're not, all right. You win everything, so you're not allowed to talk about it anymore. I haven't
paid for Xbox Live in, like, 4 years.
Jesus Christ. But online play is, what was that?
I was just saying it's the same premise, but without extra pricing.
But yeah, the bad news is that online play is going to be restricted to those who own a membership. So if you're having fun playing Splatoon or Mario Kart or ARMS online right now, when the service launches, you can't do that anymore. They're taking that ability away from you. More bad news is you are still going to need to use that stupid piece of shit smartphone app to have any kind of voice chat. So, Nintendo, you still don't have your shit together. It's been how long that people have said this smartphone app is fucking stupid not to do it, and they're still doing it. Hooray.
So they're going to start charging you for what you've already been able to do for free, and you still don't get voice chat.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, I would have been more
okay with this. Why is this $20 a good deal?
Yeah, if it happened, you know, 3 months after the console launch, I didn't understand that. But they've been giving away, the people have gotten used to this. It's been a year and a half. No, not a year and a half. Year and 3 months, 2 months?
Something like that. It's been a while that they've had this free trial of the online service because they keep delaying it. I don't know. I think they should just keep online play free. Because
here's where I kind of think that's going to go, like, tits up for them, is because there's a lot of parents who buy Nintendo for their kids because it's a kid-friendly system, and they don't have to pay anything extra. You buy the system, and that's it. Your kid can play what they want. They don't have to worry about it. And I know damn good and well that there's going to be parents who don't keep up with news on their Nintendo. Because it's just, they think of it as what their kid does.
And these are probably the parents that, like, still call games tapes.
I can't play my game. Yeah. And then, you know, the kid's going to come in one day and little Johnny's going to be like, I can't play my game. And mom and dad are going to shit the bed when they realize they got a couple of money to pay for what he's already been doing.
This is some bullshit, Jimmy. We ain't made of fucking money over here.
Little Johnny's Switch is going to the pawn shop is what I'm trying to say.
On the bright side, there are some perks for people who pay. The first one is finally, and it sucks that this is getting tied to a paid service, but PlayStation Plus does it the same way. People will finally have save data cloud backup. So finally, a way to back up your saves. Again, this is tied to the online service, but it's the same way on Plus. So I think both companies need to get their shit together with online cloud backups. Microsoft, it's just, they're there. If you have a game, you have cloud saves. The end. No payment needed. No nothing. And then the other perk of the online service is the Nintendo Entertainment System Nintendo Switch Online service, where subscribers will have access to NES games, a compilation of classic games that will initially include 20 with more added, quote, on a regular basis. So far, the games announced are Balloon Fight, Dr. Mario, Mario Brothers 3, Donkey Kong, Ice Climber, Legend of Zelda, Mario Brothers, Soccer, Super Mario Brothers, and Tennis. And for the first time ever, those games, as long as they have the functionality, will be online. All of them.
Huh.
So if you want to play NES Soccer online with a friend, good news.
Dr. Mario, though, for real.
Fuck, I'll totally, man.
Dr. Mario with some peeps.
I will throw down with you, man.
And I guess, like, I mean, you can play two-player Mario 3 and alternate. I guess you're watching, they're syncing up the ROMs, and you're watching the other person play their turn. You know, is that how this is working?
Well, it says here friends can even watch each other play single-player games online and pass the controller anytime they want. So I could be playing a stage, having trouble with it, and be like, fuck this, Grant, you try it. And then you get control of the game, and you go through it.
That's pretty wild. That's a very new concept. That right there, because I don't really care about the rest of this stuff. I don't think I'll ever play. No time soon will I be playing Switch Online, just because there's not that much I'm interested in. And I don't really. Cloud Backups is fine. I mean, Smash will come out later, and I'll be all one place to Smash. But this stuff's crazy. Like, that's nuts. That's like, yeah. I've tried to play. I tried to use. There's an emulator that allows you to play NES games. You can sync on a server, and I tried to play Contra with my brother across the country, and the lag was just bad enough that it wasn't doable. Mm. Then again, that's just using some you know, emulator hackery, but I want to see this in action. I'm really curious.
Yeah, I kind of wonder if they're going to do a good job with it or not.
Yeah, well, I mean,
it's one of those that it sounds good on paper. How's it actually going to work in practice?
Yeah. How's it going to work when Nintendo rolls it out, right?
Yeah.
Very good. Best news of all, though, all those old NES games will have voice chat with the smartphone app. Hooray.
With that app. What if you ain't got a phone, though? Like, I guess that's one way to keep kids off of it.
Who doesn't own phones these days, though? It's not the 90s or the early aughts where, like, people owning cell phones were still a select group of people.
Look, I live in redneck land, and there's still a select group of people that have phones.
Well, that's because you just said you live in redneck land, so that's your own fault.
Well.
Anyway, some other news. Did you guys see this reported massive game leak that happened with Walmart Canada?
No, I don't know
about this one.
They put up a bunch of placeholder pre-order pages for a shitload of games, including, you know, stuff we know about, like WWE 2K19, NBA 2K19, Smash Brothers is on there, Beyond Good and Evil 2 is on there, and then there's some interesting things on there, like Borderlands 3 is listed on there, an Xbox Rage version of the 2. Final Fantasy VII Remake is on there, Rage 2 is on there, Just Cause 4 is on there, a new Splinter Cell is on there. They have one listed as Dragon Quest 2, which a lot of people are assuming that is Dragon Quest Builders 2, which everyone knows coming to PS4. They have an Xbox listing for it as well. So there's all of these new games that may have possibly just been leaked by fucking Walmart.
That's incredible. But
also Forza Horizons 5.
Yeah, that's like the one that stands out. It's Forza Horizons 5, which a lot of people think is just a typo, because Horizon 4 is most likely coming out this year.
What if 5 is so good? Wait, 4 is so good, they just skipped it, right?
And go right to 5.
Go right to 5.
Maybe it's like 13, where to someone, 4 is an unlucky number, so they're, instead of Forza Horizon 4, Forza, they're just going to go to 5, so that people don't get confused. Yes, 5's a Horizons.
5's a Horizon. If they don't do that, they're stupid. I didn't even know about any other games. Is that most of the...
Let's see, The Division 2, but we all knew about that. Mm-hmm. Splinter Cell, Insurgency Sandstorm, Last of Us 2, which people knew about already, Dragon Quest, WWE, Destiny Comet, which people think is just going to be the latest version with the newest DLC, kind of like how they did with The Taken King, how they just re-released the game. Let's see, Lego DC Villains, which, you know, a new Lego game is not going to shock anybody at all. Gears of War 5, which seems kind of like a no-brainer. But yeah, that seems to be about... Oh, a new Assassin's Creed as well, which, again, shocker.
That's crazy. The Prey 2 was kind of surprising. I actually really enjoyed Prey.
Not Prey 2, Rage 2.
Oh, I don't know what I'm... I don't know. I actually meant Rage 2.
You're drunk.
2.
You're drunk.
I'm wasted. Wasted. No, the Rage 2, that's like id, right? Like desert, Mad Max-y kind of... Yeah. Looty. I really enjoyed it. I don't know if I finished it, but I enjoyed what I played. I'm curious.
Yeah, it was a really cool game, so I'm excited to see a potential sequel to it. Well, I guess we'll find out eventually.
Just Cause 4, totally in. I love Just Cause 3.
I would nut for Just Cause 4. I was worried that they might not do anything because the first game had so many technical issues on consoles, but it's happening. Hopefully it turns out well. Yeah, good and well at the same time. Gwell
or wood, either way. The Just Cause 3 was just freaking busted on the Xbox One, but I still played it to completion 100%. It was like, gosh, it had like minute and a half load times. I swear I had probably 8 or 9 hard crashes in that game throughout the course of playing it, but I just loved it so much. I had to play it. I didn't have a decent, I have a better graphics card now, but the one I had couldn't run it.
Yeah.
Yep, I would love that.
Some more game release news. This one wasn't listed on Walmart Canada, but Capcom announced this week that Monster Hunter Generations Ultimate, known in Japan as Monster Hunter XX, is finally announced for a U.S. release on the Switch with an August 28th release date. So it looks like the mind-blowing success of Monster Hunter World has convinced Capcom to stop being bitchy with Monster Hunter games.
Good.
Yeah. So Switch owners, good news for them. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's a pretty high fidelity game. I'll be interested to see what they have to do to it to kind of gut it down on the visuals to get it on Switch. It's pretty shiny game.
This isn't Monster Hunter World that they're porting over. This is Monster Hunter XX, known in America as Generations Ultimate. Generations, I believe, was a 3DS game. So this is a completely separate standalone game from World.
Got it. Yeah. You obviously know what I'm talking about. Carry on.
Indeed. some early release news. The Crash N-Sane trilogy is not going to be coming out in July like people thought. It is instead launching June 29th on Xbox, Switch, and PC. So hooray for early releases.
Yay. That's kind of nice given how often the games get delayed.
Very true. It's nice to see something come out a little earlier. But given it's been a year since it first came out on PlayStation, I would hope it didn't need a lot of porting time.
You would be surprised.
True. One game was added to the Xbox backward compatibility lineup this week, and it's a biggie with goddamn Burnout Revenge. I was fucking thrilled when I saw that.
Wait a minute.
What?
Revenge.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. That's straight awesome.
Yeah, boy. Even better, the game digital on Xbox is only $10 brand new.
Oh, wow.
$10.
Dude, that's amazing.
I bought that shit that's immediately.
That's a future game took gold.
I don't care. I worth the $10. If everyone gets it free because I bought it, awesome. Good. There is some pretty bad news for Xbox fans, though. If you are a Game Pass subscriber at the end of May, you are going to lose a lot of games. There are 21 games leaving the service at the end of May.
That's a lot. I think the most we've ever lost is like, what, 3 or 4 a month?
There was a month where there were like 8 or 9 that went, but 21. Good God.
This is which service?
The Game Pass. It's like the monthly subscription where you pay $10 a month. And
they're supposed to be like, adding to that.
Well, they are. They add like 8 each month, but they said games are going to rotate in and out because it's like Netflix. Games are going to go away. But I just didn't expect 21 to leave at the same time. On the bright side, most of them are Xbox 360 games, and people kind of bitched about that to begin with. So the list of games are Age of Booty, Bionic Commando Rearm 2, Bioshock 1, 2, and Infinite, Blood Bowl 2, Borderlands, Bound by Flame, De Blob 2, Dead Rising 2, K-Zero, Defense Grid 2, Dig Dug, I know that's going to kill a lot of people, Final Fight Double Impact, the Sega Vintage Collection for Golden Axe, the Sega Vintage Collection for Alex the Kid and Company, Neo Geo Battle Coliseum, Operation Flashpoint Dragon Rising, Pac-Man Championship Edition DX+, Sacred 3, Soul Calibur, and XCOM Enemy Within. So that's
Have we heard what's being added next month yet? We haven't, right?
Nothing
it's
yet.
Too early in the month for that. So I feel like there's got to be some pretty lofty additions to make up for that big of a loss of games.
There's got to be something big in June.
I mean, we know State of Decay 2 is coming.
That's this month though.
But I mean, that's still a lot to just drop out the window immediately, all in 1 month.
Like, for so many to go away at once, it worries me, because there's games that I passed up buying because they're in Game Pass, like Sea of Thieves, like Laser League, like the RoboCraft Infinity game, like State of Decay 2 is going to be. So I wonder, are those eventually going to leave as well? Because they still haven't been very clear.
That first-party ones are going to stay permanently.
They said that they're going to be adding them permanently. Did they confirm they will never leave?
Yes, Mike Ibarra on Twitter said that they would never leave Game Pass.
Then why did Jetpack leave?
I don't know, but they said first parties that get added stay for good. So Sea of Thieves, State of Decay, Crackdown, assuming the new Forza that will inevitably hit this year.
I don't know. I just worry because the Maw left. Jetpack left. We've seen first party games, maybe not, but still, why would they leave though? If they have the rights to them, why would they leave? That's what worries me.
I don't have that answer.
Mike
Ibarra, because I can only ask so many questions and get them answered on Twitters.
All right. Clearly, we need Mikey Barra to come on the show, which will never, ever, ever, ever happen.
But this, he did put on Twitter at the time, as soon as the announcement of, okay, we're adding first-party games to Game Pass became a thing, immediately the bandwagon came, yeah, but they're not going to stay there. It'll just be for like 2 weeks or whatever. And he said, No, it is permanent. They will not leave Game Pass. So for what that amounts to, going forward, all first parties that are added to Game Pass stay there.
I was under the impression he was talking about that they will continue adding all of their first party games, not necessarily that they would stay there forever.
Because he was even saying it in his Mixer stream and stuff. So,
all right, cool.
Like, people were jumping in and laying into, they're just going to get removed. No, they stay. Well,
that's good to hear, at least.
Those are good. like I said, State of Decay and Sea of Thieves and Crackdown and obviously any future first party that haven't been officially announced yet, those will get Will of the Wisp when it comes out, will be in Game Pass and so on.
They'll be there until they change their mind.
Yeah, until Game Pass is no longer a thing.
Hey, let's remember, Kinect will always be required with the Xbox One, so they could change their mind whenever they fucking feel like it.
And they can, but,
hopefully they
will. For where we're at right now,
If only Forza was a part of it, I would do it. But
It will be.
I don't think it will be.
40. Horizon 4. As long as they stick true to their word that all first party games are going to be in there.
Yes, going forward. I meant the old ones, but yeah, you're totally right. The new one will be. They'll be on there.
Yeah. Do you not have the other Forza games?
I never bought Horizon 3 because I was watching eBay listings. I've been trying to get the best deal possible. I don't actually own the Xbox in my living room, which I didn't want to buy it, and then I just end up turning around and selling it.
Well, so you have a computer, right?
Yeah, but I don't have Windows 10.
Oh, well, get Windows 10. I don't know.
That would destroy everything audio related at the moment, and I don't let that happen. It's going to have to happen, but at the moment, it's not an option.
Oh, man. But yeah, that's all the news I got. Any news on your ends that y'all would like to talk about?
I can give you some Runner news since it's hot.
Cool.
It's hot. Let's Runner hear it. 3 coming to the Switch and the PC May 22nd. And they announced cameos for a couple so far of the cameo characters in Runner 3.
Who?
Shovel Knight is one.
Shocking.
Shovel Knight's in a lot of stuff. So you can play Runner Shovel Knight. You can also play as Eddie Briggs from Brutal Legend.
Oh, shit.
Which is pretty great, swinging his guitar around. And I will say that the craziest is, for the very first time, you will be able to play as Charles Martinet in a video game.
What?
Charles Martinet narrated Runner 2. He was the narrator, and he's the narrator Runner 3 as well. And he's into the idea. He tweeted about it the other day. But Charles Martinet is an unlockable and playable character in Runner 3.
That is amazing.
The weirdest thing ever. And they revealed, and I think it was Good Nintendo made a little video of them doing the unboxing of the physical version of the Runner 3, and because they had a booklet. If you scratch, it has like the unlockable characters are scratch away. So you open, you get like your quarter out and scratch to reveal who the characters are. And there's clearly a Mario silhouette. It is very much Mario running, and it says "It's a Me" under the name. And then you scratch it, and they basically like forced Charles Martinet's character from the game inside the silhouette of Mario. It's quite funny. So anyway, they announced that this week. So I thought I'd share too.
I might have to grab the physical version just so I could see that.
Yeah, Nicholas puts some sweet swag in their physical releases sometimes. They have a little Commander Video keychain that lights up and a little
sample. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. If you're going to do a physical version and you have to charge a little more because of it, you might as well throw some extra goodies in there.
Yeah, because they do, what, like 40 for all of their physical versions, which I know turns a lot of people off, but...
Yeah, a lot of them. I don't know if they're all 40, but a lot of them are. At least the ones I've come across have been, so...
Hey, if that's what it takes to finally get a goddamn instruction book in a game again, you know...
I know.
That's the price you pay.
Kind of like the equivalent, it's like the vinyl equivalent these days, it seems like. You know, people are limited run doing all these old games in physical form, and it's like if you want something to celebrate on your shelf, you can get it sometimes.
Just costs a couple extra bucks.
Definitely costs a couple extra bucks.
Cool, well, I'm looking forward to Runner. Cole, do you have any news?
I don't think I do. I could have swore I had something and wrote it down, but I can't find it, so I guess I didn't.
Well, you're fucking wrong.
Yeah. Worst co-host ever.
Well, should we dive into the reviews then? Because we have a handful to get through tonight.
Cool.
First game to talk about is called Conan Exiles, developed and published by Funcom, released May 8th, full release out of early access on Xbox One, PC, PS4 for $49.99. Conan Exiles is an open-world survival game set in the brutal lands of Conan the Barbarian. Survive in a savage world, build your kingdom, and dominate your enemies in brutal combat and epic warfare. And if you're in Europe, you get dongs. Cole, tell us about our dongless American version of Conan.
It doesn't have a penis slider, and it's sad. Like, this is the most traumatic thing I've ever experienced in a game, to be denied a dick slider. Also, if you're playing as a female, the American version, the humor to it, too, is that you can choose between partial nudity and no nudity. You don't get full nudity unless you're buying the international version. But in the American version, we get to choose between all or nothing. But we get breasts. If you're playing as a female character, you can be topless. And you do get the endowment slider to decide how big your tits are going to be. If you have the international version, though, you get to go full frontal. and you get to decide the size of that, too.
Man,
we got the boring version.
Is this on PC? Is this on PC?
Yeah.
Yep.
Do they not?
It's on PC. It's on Xbox. I think the PC version can go full frontal even in the US. I'm not sure.
Yeah, probably. I know a lot of the visual novels and like that game, that really violent game, Agony, getting ready to come out. To get away from the adult only rating, they had to cut some stuff, and then they have a patch on their website you can download to put it back. I didn't know if they had that kind of thing. On PC, that's what I'm saying.
They don't have fun shit Xbox, like that on console.
Yeah, on Xbox we don't get all the full fun sliders. You can decide your boob size, but beyond that, you're out of luck. Once you get past the whole deciding how big your tits are going to be, you can also, you know, customize your character's face, their race, you can choose their religion, and all these things can kind of affect the way that your game plays out. It is a massive open world, like you mentioned in the summary, and you basically just start off in the desert. You're actually crucified. You've been accused of some sort of crime. When you start the game, you have a sheet of paper attached to you on your abdomen that shows your crimes. I decapitated a priest, apparently, which seems like something I would do. how very eternal of me. But you're hanging crucified in the desert. You have nothing except for something covering your private parts, of course, because America, and a bracelet for reasons. If you remove your bracelet, your character dies. Spoiler alert. So you can use that if you're in a pinch, but otherwise you're just going to kill yourself unnecessarily, as I found out the hard way. A mysterious stranger will help you down from your crucifix, and then you begin your journey. And your goal is basically to just survive in this wasteland. You will need to find food. You will need to find shelter. You will need to find intelligent life. You better hope like hell that they're not hostile to you as well. Some of them will be, but if you are playing online, you might luck out and make a friend. If you're playing solo or in single player and you don't have anybody co-oping with you, you're kind of just shit out of luck and all the AI are going to try to kill you. So good luck. I hope you can make a weapon quickly.
If you're playing online, you will die.
Yeah, and I like to think that maybe somewhere there's a server where people won't be like, oh my god, somebody new, and immediately kill you, but that probably never happens. There's like 99.28% chance that never happens.
That's a very exact percentage, too.
Right? So it's probably correct. my percentages are correct 98.34% of the time.
Okay, now you're going a bit overboard.
That's a running joke because I always use the same number every time I say that, so it sounds correct. But yeah, I'd like to pretend that there is just gonna be nice servers. Unless you set up a server and run it with your friends, though, you're probably not gonna run into that. But ideally, your goal is to just create a tribe and go from being stuck in a wasteland with absolutely nothing to building cities and taking over the world, and just you can build some really cool weaponry, and you can be the kind of player who just sets up and protects your own shit, or you can strike out and go piss people off and take out other tribes,
make friends out monsters, with big ass monsters.
There are big ass monsters. There are even giants, and just the more you explore, there's just so much there. You just have to go find it, and you have to be able to survive it once you do find it, which you will probably not. but this is your classic, you know, survival type game. It gets a lot of comparison to Ark, and rightfully so. I do think in comparison to Ark, though, that it has a lower learning curve. It's a lot easier to pick up and get started with. Whereas, you know, when you drop into Ark, there could immediately be a Brontosaurus ready to squash you. whereas, you know, you have a few minutes to kind of wander around and get your shit together before you start running into things that will fuck you up in Conan. And there are things that will get you. There are some really weird creatures in this world, and I don't want to spoil any of them, but they're pretty wild. And then you're just sitting here going, I don't understand what person thought this up, but okay, it's a thing. But, you know, the giants and stuff are predictable, but some of the others, you're just like, that's a thing that I just saw, and it just killed me. there are humans, there are the creatures, you know, and even if you're playing solo, there are still humanoids in the world that can attack you. You may be out casually exploring and come across a tribe of cannibals, and if you're not prepared for them, your lunch. and I don't mean your lunch as in, you know, you will find lunch and eat it. No, you will be the lunch. So yeah,
I got that.
Okay, just making sure. After I said it, I was like, I wasn't entirely sure that was clear.
Grant, did you get it? Did you understand that?
I picked it up.
Okay. Food. Are you picking up what I'm putting down? Because what I'm putting down is that you're a sandwich. Are you trying to understand that I got killed by cannibals? Because I did.
I'm guessing a lot of things killed you.
A lot of things killed. Mostly crocodiles. I always get the bright idea in these survival games. I'm like, I'm going to be smart, and I'm going to build my house by the water, and it's going to be pretty, and then there's alligators, and they eat me. And I'm lunch again.
Good stuff.
So
what else?
I keep saying that it's this huge open world, and it just keeps getting bigger. Yesterday, which won't be yesterday when the show goes live, and I apologize for that, but just recently there were two new biomes added, a volcano and a swamp area. So there are continued updates. Even after the game has gone full release, there will be extra things added. The world will continue to be tweaked and supported. You can explore, you can, you know, make friends. This is really just your classic survival sandbox, and the game is what you make of it. There is a story to it, but some of it, unfortunately, is kind of locked behind what the game calls corruption. And there are these story areas. You have a journey, and a little journal will keep track of what you're unlocking throughout the story mode, based on what you do. And sometimes your journal will kind of direct you to go to these places that are corrupted. And I wish I could tell you more and like explain how the corruption works a little better. It kind of just feels like there's a mist over the area or a fog, and you're not really supposed to be there. And as you're in the area, it will gradually chip away your health and your stamina. And these are permanent knockbacks. Like, it will take chunks of your health and stamina that you can't recover. And then the only way to cure yourself of that corruption is to find an entertainer in a village that's not hostile.
Entertainer as in an actual entertainer, or as in like a whore?
As in a dancer.
Interesting.
So I don't like, it's such an odd concept, and I spent forever and I never could get rid of my corruption because I couldn't even find. I even actively tried to look up where I should be able to find an entertainer online, and then used admin cheats to go to those areas, and I still just got killed. I don't know what I'm doing wrong. I will never get my health back. I'm just gonna wander around in the desert lightly corrupted.
You can always cheat and use the admin commands like I've seen people doing.
You can, and that's that is something of note. If you're an achievement whore, you can complete the game in about 40 minutes. It's very quick. And the funny thing is like, I mentioned the 40 minutes, but I don't know. I didn't watch the videos on how to do it. You could probably do it a little quicker if they're not using one little trick, but you can go into the admin commands and just force spawn all the enemies at once that you need to kill for the achievements, and then hit one little button that says kill all NPCs.
Nice.
And then you're done. You'll unlock every boss achievement in like 15 seconds.
Well, I know how I'm spending my night. But overall, this sounds like a massive, massive, massive game. So I got to know, $50 on this one. What do you think?
It really is impressive. It is really well done. The game plays fairly well. I did have one instance where I was playing, and it didn't happen every time I played, but I would be in a fight or something, and I would experience like kind of like a ghost echo of where I'd been, but there would be like a little trail of ghosting behind me. When it did it, I crashed the game, restarted it, and it was gone. It didn't do it again until about an hour or so later. Because even though I could complete the game in 40 minutes, I did play it more.
No. Did you complete the game in 40 minutes?
I completed it. No, I'm missing one achievement because you have to crush somebody by standing on their head, and I have to install the game on my husband's Xbox.
Oh, God.
so he can, I'll be like, can you, you know, come here so I can get this completion real quick. I love my husband, but I use him for games.
I can't wait for him to curse you out in the chat room.
Yeah, because he can hear me.
Oh, man. We do have to move on, though.
For $49. You didn't even let me say if I'd buy it or not, but
you,
I would.
I thought you went through that already.
I didn't.
You're very long-winded with your verdict.
I know. Well, because I forgot to mention the part about the ghosting, but even with that little oops, I would still buy it, and I think you should, too.
Cool. Sounds good. I will. Or maybe I already have it.
Is this early access or is this out?
Full release.
This is officially released now. It has been in game preview and it is now launched.
Oh, okay.
For
okay.
good.
Yeah, it is now fully out.
If you do buy it, switch your console to the UK and get the DOS.
I may have done that during the early access. The funny thing is, during early access, when it first came out, I downloaded it from the UK store. Like I registered my purchase, switched my marketplace to the UK store, and I downloaded the nudity DLC that lets you have the full mm-hmm. kit and caboodle. And I went back to my American account, or not account, but I reset my console back to American and it didn't work. So I figured, oh, well, it's tied to whatever region your console's on. With full release, I got a dick. It was wow. there. It was there in all its glory. And it's not just dicks that are there in all their glory. Like, the hoo-hoo was there in all its glory.
Yeah.
Like, split down the middle and it's naked. Yeah.
Don't take screenshots of that or you'll get banned on Xbox Live.
No, that's why you just take them with your phone camera and then send them to friends on Skype. Right, Cole? Yeah,
and put bunny ears on them.
Yes. Yes. But moving on, next game to talk about is called Steins Gate Zero, developed by Mages Inc., published by Spike Chunsoft, released May 8th on Steam for $34.99. If you can't save the one that you love, how can you save humanity? Sequel to the visual novel cult classic, experience an alternate world line of Steins Gate. Dark Mika covered this one for us and sent in her review. And Grant, you're going to read it for us, aren't you?
I'm going to read this. I've never spoken with Dark Mika. Don't know how to inflect here, but I am going to read what was sent to us about Steins Gate Zero.
I'm excited for this. I love making our guests read them.
Warning for there are spoilers in here. It's possible you could, you know, if you care that much, maybe Joe, you could assume that I will warn you when we get to that section.
Yeah, I think it's spoilers for the first game or for the beginning of this one, right?
I don't exactly know. Actually, I am pretty sure they are spoilers for this game.
Cool. Well, let's hear it.
Because I guess that's in the end, it is a visual novel. So here we go. So Steins Gate Zero is an adventure visual novel, just barely. It is mostly kinetic. There are 5 to 6 endings for the game. The endings are all based almost completely on when you are willing or not to talk to an AI. There are a few other things, but 90% of the time, that's about it. You play as Rintaru Okabe. In the first game, so this is a sequel, I guess, right? So Steins Gate was Steins Gate Zero. In the first game, he fell in love with a super genius 17-year-old university student who went through a study abroad program, and he forced her into a high school because that's not stupid. She's the classic trope of a shitbag super scientist woman. Arrogant, always right, fairly emotionless, unless constantly PMS is an emotion, and gives exactly zero fucks about anyone else's feelings or opinions. Eventually, she warms up to Okabe because, you know, why the fuck not?
Exactly.
We have spoilers here, and it's
how
a big one.
How big?
Big, like the first three words are pretty big, so just be warned. Ready?
Yes.
She dies hard.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's
pretty big. He's fucking wrecked. However, a girl from the future comes back in the time machine to help him save the girl. Don't ask. It's fucking complicated. Now, if you've ever seen or read The Time Machine, then you'll know about how well this goes. There are multiple endings to that game, and it's a bit more cheery than this one. But the true end well, if you've seen or read The Time Machine, you know how he saves the girl. It goes just that fucking well. This game starts immediately after he figures out exactly how it's going to go after going through the various timelines trying to fucking save her. So we're still in spoiler territory here. Cover your ears. He's traumatized, not just because he's a fuck up who can't get the one thing he wants and sees it taken away in a spectacular way over and over, but also because he's been in so many timelines. They've started to mix in his head, making him paranoid. He doesn't know who he can and can't trust. He knows things that... I know. I'm intrigued. He knows things that happened in other timelines that didn't in his, for instance, and the timeline he's in right now. He never met the girl. They never became friends. But he still knows everything she told him in all the other timelines when they were friends. Crazy. So interacting with people who are involved with her is complicated because he spent so much time with her. The game is the definition of depression. He's broken, everything he loves is gone, and he knows he can't get it back. But he has to find a way to save her to prevent a war in the future. Big stuff. The girl I mentioned with the time machine, she came from the time of the war, and her mission was to get him to save the woman he loves because she can find the one and only timeline where there isn't a war fucking everything up. Oh yeah, and since he's been fucking around with the timeline so much, he's caused issues in his world because the timelines are messed up thanks to him. People are remembering things that didn't happen because they're remembering bits and fragments of other timelines, and it just gets worse from there. He's really fucked everything up. End of spoilers.
That's some pretty spoilery stuff, huh?
Yeah, that sounds like most of it. So we're back to everyone take your hands off your ears. If you can hear me, say that.
Hey!
The game is fully voice acted in Japanese only, I believe. And as mentioned, you need to play the first game. The plot is convoluted, is a convoluted fucking tapestry of pure what the fuck. However,
just such a way with words sometimes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. However, the great thing about this series is that there's an anime to this fucker too. The first anime and the first game are the same. The second anime and this game are similar. The anime isn't as good this time, apparently. So I guess she hasn't watched it. So you can binge the first anime if you want. It's called, like the game, Steins Gate. Second anime, just like this game, is called Steins Gate Zero. So yeah, you can play the first game because honestly, both of these make for amazing books. They're based in theoretical science that is honestly fucking fascinating. It uses real-life science, theoretical science, and a good dash of sci-fi bullshit to create this amazing thing. Also, it's all internally logical, i.e. the rules and laws governing this shit are always the same. No friendship is magical, so everything is super-powered right now. Bullshit. That's hyphenated. So, for $35, if this was a book, it'd be pretty fucking big. This is a sizable, like, Stephen King-sized motherfucker. First playthrough is going to take probably about 12 to 14 hours. You have five or six endings to find, so probably 18 to 20 hours if you skip all the stuff you've already read. I think that's a pretty good price. A brand new hardback costs about the same, honestly, so yeah, it's worth it. It's something you can think about after you've played even, and the mechanics in this game can be used as amazing thought experiments.
Interesting. Sounds really cool.
Sounds like a sell. I guess, you know, it sounds sciencey and complicated, and it's a visual novel. So, you know, you're either into those or not, probably. So
sounds exactly like you. Sciencey, complicated, and a visual novel.
There you go. That's me. 100%.
Good stuff. Well, Grant, yeah. Were you going to stick around or did you need to get going? I know I don't want to eat up all of your night.
Yeah, I kind of do need to get moving, but I wanted to come and say hello. It's been a while.
Oh, hello.
Yeah, yeah. But y'all be good. Y'all be good. Cole, be good.
We will.
Keep the family in check.
Grant. I don't know how to be good.
Okay, don't be terrible. Please be bad. Don't be good. Don't be good for me.
Don't be cruel.
Yeah, definitely don't be cruel.
Grant, it is always good having you on chatting with us. I'm probably going to play more of your music on the show because I always play your music on the show.
You're the man.
So do you have any requests?
Oh, man, I don't even know. Play the, I just put that new EP out. Play the Tectonic Symphonic from that thing. That's a short banger.
Tectonic Symphonic. What track number? I know I played three of them on the last episode.
Well, if you played that one, you don't have to. I think it's four. It's
okay, I don't think one. I played that one, so I'll play that one.
Cool, brother.
Cool. Have awesome. Yourself a Thanks wonderful a night, Grant.
You too. Take care.
Hugs and kisses, baby.
Dude, bye.
All right, next game to talk about is called Subaria, developed and published by Illogica, released May 9th on Xbox One for, I don't have the price written down, son of a bitch. Do you know how much it is?
Good job. I think it's $14.99, but I don't want to be quoted on that.
Well, I quoted you. So, players follow Styx, a young girl who's out for revenge after her family's murdered by the overlord of Subaria. She must fight her way through droves of murderous robots by pitting them against one another. As she progresses towards her goal of revenge, she'll explore the underwater city of Subaria to uncover the mysteries that lie below the depths. Cole, tell us about this one while I look up the price.
Joe, I love this game. Sometimes that's the only way you can start this.
Well, tell me why you love this game. Well, tell me what the game is first.
I have to tell you what it is. I don't ever know the proper terms for genres.
Well, what do you do in the game?
Subaria is an
what do you do in this $14.99 game?
Look at that. Look how good I was with that guess.
I've got my shit together tonight. Yeah.
That's skill, motherfucker. Subaria is an action puzzler with roguelike elements. It's a really interesting blend of the two genres. I don't even know that maybe action puzzler is a genre on its own. It might be action and then puzzler and then roguelike. Either way, it's all just kind of thrown into a blender. We have a futuristic world that has been flooded, and the world of Subaria has come under the control of a totalitarian named President Dorf. President Dorf is a jerk. And he has a zero tolerance policy on any kind of crime whatsoever. So, should you be found guilty of literally anything, then the cleaners are sent after you, but not just you, you and your family. Our heroine is a teenage girl named Styx, who happens to take great joy in X-Pods. And X-Pods are a virtual reality device that is used by pretty much everybody in Subaria. It's used as a means of distraction to ignore the fact that the place is a total shithole.
Nice.
And so, Styx, of course, like everybody else, is addicted to her X-Pod. But because she is part of the factory workers, her family is lower income and therefore not able to spend money on apps like she would like, so she hacks them. And we begin the game with Styx discovering that she has been found guilty of criminal activity for hacking X-Pods, and that her and her family have been sentenced to be cleansed. So Styx runs home, only to find that the cleaners have already taken out her family.
Hmm.
I'm not going to say spoiler alert, because that's literally the first 3 minutes of the game. After losing her family, Styx needs to... motorcycles.
I'm leaving them in again. Because I'm too lazy to edit. Vroom, 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 vroom. Are they gone yet?
Yeah. Okay. So Styx not only needs to preserve her own life from the cleaners and go on the run, but she decides that she is going to get revenge on President Dorf for killing her family. So players take over as Styx, and they have her handy-dandy drone, which is, the controls set it up so that your right analog stick controls the drone, and your left analog stick controls Styx. So that's how you get your movement around. Your face buttons are for jumping and rolling with Styx. And then otherwise, everything else controls your drone. You will find apps in the world that you can equip to your drone, and they let you manipulate the cleaners that you will run into and have to deal with. So when you find an app to install it to your drone, if you want to put it on your left trigger, you just hold LT and that will install it to your left trigger, or you hold RT to install it to your right trigger. And then once you want to use the app, again, it's just the corresponding trigger to use it. The game takes its roguelike elements and kind of serves it up in that each level is broken down into rooms. And so you will go into the room and you are presented with a puzzle. You'll have to destroy the cleaners in that room to move on to the next one. And each level, every time you play it, the level is randomized. So you'll still run into the same rooms because it's only kind of a roguelike and not even full-fledged roguelike. You'll run into the same rooms with similar setups and similar puzzles, even though it may have different sets of cleaners. But you will, if you die, you start all over and the layout of the level could change, even if the rooms stay the same. There are two main sets of cleaners who will chase after sticks, blue and yellow. And then each room will have various traps like lasers or different types of other environmental hazards like bombs and things. The idea to solving the puzzles to get through each room is that yellow cleaners can destroy blue cleaners. Blue cleaners can destroy yellow, but yellow cannot destroy yellow and blue cannot destroy blue.
Okay.
So the goal is once you get into a room, the portals out of that room will shut and you are locked in. And you cannot leave the room until all of the cleaners are gone. So if there, say you go into a room and there are yellow laser beams along one wall and blue on the other, you will need to either use your apps so that you can take control of the cleaners or manipulate them in some other way and force them into either each other or those lasers. Then once all, you eliminate all the cleaners that way, you can move on to the next room. It's a really creative concept that's incredibly difficult to explain properly.
I could say it sounds really, really cool.
Yeah, it's really unique. I don't think I've ever played a game that literally every room was a puzzle and every one of them could be solved a different way every time you played. Because I keep mentioning the apps, but there are 50 different apps that you will unlock as you play this game. And every one of them changes how you solve a puzzle. So some of the apps are master apps, and they will let you just take full control of a cleaner. So you can literally just steer the cleaner into a laser and be done with it. Whereas other apps will make a cleaner piggy banks, and then they'll drop creds, which you can use to buy further upgrades. Some of the apps will make a cleaner go dizzy, and then they will just lose control and spin around the room. And if they hit a laser, well, lucky you. You know? Or if they hit another cleaner of the opposite color, lucky you. That's one less you've got to deal with. There are, in some rooms too, there are cleaners that are neutral. They are neither blue nor yellow. They will kill both blue and yellow cleaners, but they will also kill you.
Yeah. So you'll get your shit wrecked no matter what.
You really do have to be careful. It's funny because it seems ominous when you start the game the first time. And you will die a lot in the beginning before you get anywhere. But every time you play, you're progressing towards unlocking more apps that make the game easier. And eventually the apps, not only do you unlock more of them that change things up, but you also level up the apps that you have as you use them. So when they level up, they get buffs, like the cooldown to use it again doesn't take as long. Or you'll get more uses out of the app the next time you install it. Because each app is limited in how many times you can activate it. Some may only let you activate them twice. some of them that are higher level may let you activate them as many as 14, 15, or 16 times. It's all about using the apps and leveling them up to make the most out of them.
Nice. This game sounds really, really cool. I got to know, $15 on this one. It's 15, right? Did we come to the decision?
15. Yeah, you said it was $15.
$15. What is your verdict on Siberia?
This is a definite buy it. I'm probably going to go play more of it after we finish the show. I'm in love with it and I really want to complete it.
And I don't have it, so I don't know how amazing it is. So I'm going to have to pick this up soon.
You're going to have to buy this one.
Cool. Sounds good. All right. Time to tag in the guest reviews. And Tim Ekibis, you're starting off. How are you doing?
I am well. I am tired. I am here.
I always got to go with the tag when you're here.
Yeah, absolutely.
That hot tag slap.
I don't just saunter into the podcast out of nowhere. Like
Cole is worn out and she's just like crawling over to the corner and then it's just, oh, he's in. Ready to just give a bunch of clotheslines that normally would do nothing, but now they knock people out of the ring.
Yeah, yeah. It's like one little baby punch. Just like, oh my god,
they're on their back. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Some forearms.
Anyway, we should probably talk games, shouldn't we?
I guess that's what we're here for.
Cool.
Money in the Bank's only a few weeks away.
Was it? Then we can talk about wrestling. 6 weeks
away? Yeah, something. Mercifully, there is not another pay-per-view for another 6 fucking weeks.
It was like WrestleMania, Greatest Royal Rumble, and Backlash all within a 3.5 week span. And yeah, now and it's just, now we have to wait a month and a half.
The quality just took a nosedive about 2/3 of the way through WrestleMania and didn't quite recover.
Straight in the shitter.
Straight into the damn shitter.
Right in the shitter.
Or simultaneously into our ball sacks. But hey, video games.
Hopefully games that are not equivalent to ball sacks. But first game to talk about with you is Death Road to Canada, developed by Rocket Cat Games and Mad Garden, published by Ukiyo Publishing. Released May 8th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $14.99. Control a car full of jerks as they explore cities, recruit weird people, rescue dogs, argue with each other, and face gigantic swarms of slow zombies. Randomly generated for a new story and rare events every time you play. Tim, tell us about this one.
Man, that's actually a really good summary. And then all that stuff they just described, it works and it's fun. There. Boom. Signed on by it. Done. Yeah, so it's a randomly generated sort of rogue-like ash, little roguey in there. It's a little roguey, but yeah, it's randomly generated. So you start off with a couple folks. I generally prefer to just randomly generate a couple of goobers and send them off onto the road. Yeah, so you got 15 days to get to Canada in a car. And along the way, one of the first things you do, you have to stop off somewhere to get supplies. So it gives you a couple options. Some drop you there's a Walmart knockoff that is used quite a bit called Y'all-Mart.
Great name.
Yeah, there's survivalist cabins in the woods. There's like just kind of like little town streets which will have multiple buildings to go into, and you get out of your car, fend off the hordes of zombies that may be lurking around. It'll give you a forecast actually of the the savagery of the zombies that you are walking into, be it like a lot of them, are they irritated, annoyed, are they just kind of like passive standing around, whatever. But
we're
anyways,
a light cold front of agitated zombies coming in from the southwest.
Basically. Yeah. So you and your crew, and you'll have anywhere between 1 and 4 people in your crew at any given time. Start with 2 and you can find more people along the road. People can die and be replaced. But so long as you have 1 person alive, the dream of making it to Canada lives on. So you and your crew will jump out. Whoever you're controlling, everyone else follows them around. And the AI is pretty good about bashing zombies or just kind of avoiding them, if you're trying to run around them, which is what the game recommends, not to try to kill every zombie because you'll wear yourself out. You'll break all your stuff. Just got to survive, man. Got to make it to Canada. So you'll go around, you'll try to find, you got food you got to worry about. That's a big one. Gas for the car, ammunition. There's another one. Medical supplies. and that stuff. So you'll try to find that stuff. You'll scour the area, get back in the car, get going. You know, off you go.
Or this, if you really don't like Oregon Trail so far,
it's a zombie adventure. It's like Oregon Trail. It reminds me a lot of Oregon Trail because you'll drive along and then you'll have like random events along the road. Like the car will break down. And your wagon wheel broke, as it were. Your car will break down, so you can usually get options for trying to fix it or wait it out or whatever. You know, you'll get a few options. So maybe you can fix the. So each character has different skills and perks, which can affect how they interact with other members of your party, other NPCs in the world. Whether they're good with guns, whether they're good with like melee. You know, if they're good at fixing cars. So if you have someone in your party who is good at fixing cars, maybe they'll be able to fix up that broken car and off you go. And if you don't have someone, then maybe they'll try and it will barely work and they'll get a little bit better at working on cars and you'll make it a little bit farther in the car.
Oh, that's cool. So there's like an experience progression mode to it as well.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, within the game itself, because once those characters die, they're gone. But yeah, they can... like after you beat like some larger events or some things, you'll have the option, like characters, their skills will go up, their morale will go up. Morale is important. You'll come across points where you can train characters in specific skills to try to better suit them for making it through the journey. You can run out of gas, at which point your crew will just be like running down the road. this is one of the things that annoys me. It seems like if you run out of gas, you are like about to get fucked in that game. Cause like all kinds, every single time my car ran out of gas, all kinds of bad shit started happening. Either like somebody would have a fucking hole in their backpack and they'd drop shit all over the road, or we'd run into bandits, or just like bad things would happen every time we got in that situation. Though eventually it's like, oh, you see a place where there might be some cars and you can go and possibly find another car. But it, you know, as there's it, the game is pretty simple, straightforward. It's more about like how you make these decisions. Like when you're hopping around in towns and whatnot, you just have like a simple melee button or, you know, attack button. Like your little sprite characters just kind of like hop walk around. It's not like lavishly animated, but it works. You know, it works. The game has like a good sense of humor. There's like all kinds of there's some good funny writing.
I ran into a knockoff Cloud Strife already.
See, and there's a lot of randomness. So like I have not run into that particular character. My big ridiculous adventure was, so you find dogs, as you mentioned. Sometimes you can find and recruit dogs, and dogs are great. So I ended up in a situation where my only surviving party member was a dog, and
no humans at all.
No humans, just a dog. So the dog got into the car and took off. I'm like, well, that's interesting. It's a dog. But as you do that, there is actually dialogue in there that is like, well, such and such got in the car and then realized they're a dog. They can't drive. But then one thought appeared in their brain, Canada, and they figured out how to drive. And once a dog is able to drive, it is also able to shoot a pistol.
Oh, my God.
So... Yeah, so and this was my first run through the game. So it came down to just the dog. The dog, you know, learns how to drive. And then so I'm there with the dog, like going around with a snub-nosed pistol by myself, like fucking capping zombies until like the car broke down. So it got worse. So the dog's just like huffing down the road. And eventually I jacked an ice cream. an ice cream truck. So I'm this dog with a snub-nosed pistol driving an ice cream truck. And yeah, then I picked up like another dog, and eventually I found some humans, and we did not make it to Canada on that particular trip. As you go, you will get zombie points, which can then be spent to upgrade the perks to make them more effective. So when you get characters, like they will just be inherently more powerful depending on what skills they have.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, the characters you create. This has I won't call it a lavish character creation system, but you can make some characters. And let me tell you, it is a lot of fun to make a bunch of people you know and throw them into this game. They have a few different game modes. There's like your basic Death Road to Canada, which is, you know, 15 days to get to Canada. There's one that's like more days, one that's less days, one that deliberately throws special characters at you. And then there's one that where it leans on populating the game with your created characters. And that was well worth the work of creating like a dozen or so people when you get things like Joe Cam here ripping salmon out of a river. And yeah, that
what
just,
other
that
things
just,
did our friends do?
We ran into some bandits, and this was like just after I got you, and like one of the options for your character was to say cool it. And like the way it was described, it wasn't you yelling cool it, it was like Joe Cam quietly looks them in the eye and whispers, cool it, and they backed off. I'm just like, okay. Like that's funny. Yeah, so that's a lot of fun. Let's see. It has co-op. You can play this two player on the Switch. Yeah. Yeah. So I imagine you could just break off the Joy-Cons and do share a screen. So that's a nice little thing there.
This game sounds like it is nothing but ridiculousness wrapped inside the Oregon Trail. Instead, you're going to Canada.
Yeah, it's really fun. And it does have good music, I should say. It has like some...
Oh, soundtrack is so good.
Yeah, really good soundtrack on this game. But yeah, it's fun. It's like, a good valley. I did make it to Canada on one of my runs. And that was, it took me a few to get in there to make it there. But then after that, that was when I went back and created some characters to do that run. I tried the special characters run. And as you make it to Canada on those different modes, it unlocks even more modes. So there's like a lot of good replay value for playing this game. It's really fun.
Nice. So the $15 asking price, your verdict?
Yeah, that's a buy right there, friends. This is a good game. Tons of fun.
Awesome.
Good value.
All right, cool. Next game to talk about is called Garage Bad Trip, developed by Zombie Dynamics, published by Tiny Build. It released May 10th on the Switch for $14.99. Garage is a bloody shooter in the style of an 80s B-movie. Playing as drug dealer named Butch, you stand alone against hordes of the living dead. Explore every dark corner of an underground parking garage and discover a passageway to a supernatural world that has never seen... Ugh. The fuck I got in my throat there? That has never seen the light of day. Yeah, now I could talk again. Tim, tell us about this one.
Yeah. That's an interesting description there. Yeah, so this game... when I looked at the trailers, I was like, oh, it's kind of like an overhead shooter deal. This is like more... feels like they're going for an overhead survival horror Resident Evil-ish type of deal. Because it's not like super... fast-paced, like tons of zombies coming at you at any given time. Like usually it's only a couple, but boy do they come at you really fast.
So they're not the slow-moving zombies from Death Road to Canada.
No, they are not the slow-moving zombies, and it's annoying. Because it wants to like I said, survival horror, there's like ammunition is pretty limited. That's what it struck more to me. Less of a shooter, more of like that old Resident Evil style, except overhead. Like it has the whole thing where you pass a body on the ground, you come back and that body is missing and there's bloody footsteps and you follow the bloody footsteps, and then like there's a little on-screen cutscene of like a zombie turning around, just like the beginning of Resident Evil. Which homage, that's fine. But it starts out pretty slow, which is partially because like the action doesn't really pick up very fast, and partially because the game loading between the short early levels is very long. The loads are a little gnarly for an independent, downloadable game, I thought, but that, whatever. It's just like, you'll be stalking around and checking out rooms, and it's really big on... You open a door and there's like a little bit of a field of view thing going on. Like you can't see to the other side of a door. Like it will block your line of sight with having zombies pop out at you from just around a corner and then you back up. But there's also a zombie behind you. It plays this trick a lot, and it leads into a situation where instead of kind of dynamically reacting, like it just turns into kind of like trial and error. Like you go into this room and then it's like, oh, here's where the zombies pop out from. And they like maul your ass real quick because they're on top of you barely before you can react. And it's not easy to shoot. And the combat in this game is a little stiff. We'll get to that. So then you just die and then you just go back. You have a couple melee. You start out with like a punch and a kick. Eventually you pick up weapons. So you have an axe and then you start picking up some guns. So like I said, ammunition is kind of limited. It's like usually I either had none or I was completely maxed out. It was like nowhere in between. It was weird. And eventually there's human enemies too. And boy, they're way better at aiming their guns and shooting than you are. But I got to talk about these fucking rats in this game.
Tell me about the rats. Tell me about the fucking rats.
There's these fucking rats and they're fucking everywhere and they're hard to hit. Like you can shoot them with your guns, but I think mostly they want you to kick them with your kick, except your kick motion comes out kind of slow and doesn't really have a huge hitbox on it. So it's real easy to miss these rats, these fast ass fucking rats. And it likes to hide them in boxes. So it's like, They probably killed me more than anything in this game. They're such a pain in the ass, and I don't know why, like, there's such a fixation on them. There's one boss in particular that in, like, the first, I don't know, half dozen stages you end up fighting fucking twice, who shoots out rats everywhere. And while you're fighting the boss, and, like, you know, this is the point, you know, it's a boss. Okay, I'm unloading all my guns into this boss, so the boss goes down. But then there's, like, this swarm of fucking rats I got to deal with. And, like, the rats kept killing me after I killed the boss because the rats are such a pain in the ass. And you can't kill the rats during the boss because they're already hard to hit. And, you know, this isn't just me venting. This is actually kind of a problem. Like, it gets in the way of me and having fun, just to be clear. Yeah, and I was just like, what the fuck? So, yeah, that's right. The third boss is a repeat of the first boss with more health, and he also throws fucking rats. I wrote down in my notes. There's a human centipede boss. You heard me. Human centipede boss.
Oh, God.
What it looks like. And it does the thing where, like, you look at a computer monitor and you see something, like, just go out of sight in the next room, and then you go into the next room, and then it attacks you. So it's, like, it's really hitting on, like, a lot of... It was very reminiscent, but yeah, and then eventually, so your character is a shitbag. he's a fucking drug dealer, like in an asshole. So eventually, like, he finds like a radio and starts talking to some military person, and this is kind of where the conspiracy there, you know, there's story here and cutscenes, and you find notes like explaining the origin of this zombie outbreak and like what's going on and who's responsible and blah blah blah. Much like in Resident Evil. And there's just this freaking military person you start talking to who's just such a... He's just fucking terrible. It's just like... Because your guy's like, hey, what's going on? Like, and she's like, are you going to help me? I'm like, well, yeah, I guess. Like, but what's going on? She's like, I'm going to call you Cricket because you keep chirping like a cricket. Cricket, shut up, Cricket. And I'm just like, for fuck's sake. But, you know, you're some fucking dirtbag drug dealer. So, like, I'm already like... not really into this main character anyways, and you know his writing thereon forward does not endear him to me. There's like a weird at least one weird drug trip sequence where suddenly I was just bashing through the walls and fighting rats and large rats at the same time. Yeah, it was interesting. I was like, okay, this is like suddenly like Hotline Miami-ish. But like the game is very dark, like overall, and I had a lot of trouble noticing things sometimes, like doors I needed to go through, or sometimes hazards in the environment. Like it wouldn't register. It's like, oh, these are things I can't step on, and then I just step on them and die. And I'm like, oh, that's there. I couldn't quite tell that it was there, or I would end up getting to a point in a level and then finding like a key or something and then like wandering back trying to find the door, whereas the door was in the room that I was in, but I didn't quite spot it because stuff just like doesn't stand out. It's not like marked that well. I didn't have a lot of fun with this game. Like I'm like, okay, this is interesting. But then as it wore on, it's just like, I'm dying, you know, it's a lot of trial and error to make progress. Like the shooting doesn't feel good. The rats are super fucking annoying. I really cannot stress that enough, how much I hate the rats in this game. the rats get a far lower rating than the game itself. The rats are just ass.
And we should point out that you're not someone who is who's new to survival horror style games, considering you've made movies about survival horror games.
Yes.
Have you ever plugged those on the show?
Nah. We'll get
nah.
to that.
Fuck 'em.
Nah. Nah. Yeah, I may have made a movie based on Resident Evil. Though I was talking to... Whatever. This is a total tangent. So... Yeah, like I am fine with that, but it's like the game just seems to be at odds with itself. Like it can't. There's no like there's a nice deliberate pace to like those Resident Evil games where it's like you can identify the zombies, you can kind of decide what you want to do with them. But then sometimes there's going to be those moments where the dog jumps through the proverbial window. Whereas in this game, the dog is always jumping through the window. And just rushing at you. Like it's like, well, there's probably zombies in this room. Then you open the door and then it's like, okay, one comes from either side and they're coming very fast. It's just like, okay, I can, but you know, so then it's like, I die and I come back. It's like, okay, well, I'm just going to push this door open. I'm going to kill the one that's running up from behind me. And then I'm going to get the two as they fumble their way with their pathing through the door. And it just, yeah, that just didn't end up being fun. And then it's like once you start like running into areas where there's more of like these, you know, government corporate soldier guys, it just like really took a nosedive because they will just fucking smoke your ass so fast.
So when they catch sight of you. It seems like the rats suck and it could use a lot more balancing and light.
Yeah, or it's not even necessarily light, but just like to make things stand out in the environment, like the doors especially. Like other things, it's like okay, like I can blame myself for the hazard, but it's just like the door. You know, I'm just wasting time because I'm not recognizing things, and maybe I'm an idiot, but maybe I'm not.
Nah, half and half, I guess. But $15 on this one. What is your verdict?
No, sir. Damn. I don't like it.
I thought it looked awesome too.
I thought it looked cool. Like it, yeah. It's just like it just doesn't really come together.
Is it salvageable with some fine tuning and some patching?
Maybe. We'll have to see. But
cool. Well,
I don't know. Maybe
if there's any.
I would say horror people, like, you know, some, you know, horror people are crazy. You know, they you might want to give it a look on sale if like you're a horror dude. Just check it out. But I just didn't think it was fun enough or doing like interesting enough stuff to overlook where it was falling short. You know, it's like what was that fucking game, Rule of Rose? That's a really weird ass game that does not play very well, that has lots of problems, but it's so weird, like with its story and what's going on, that there's something there to latch onto. And this is just like the what's going on is cliche and the playing of it is not a lot of fun, so meh.
Well, Tim, always good having you on.
Can't win them all.
True, very true. You could win some of them.
There is a death road to Canada that you should definitely take a ride on.
There you go. That's the bright spot in this.
Oh, yeah. Fuck yeah. You can't buy them all, but there is a zombie game for you out there, friends.
Sounds good. Tim, always good having you on chatting about this stuff. Do you have any final thoughts?
Oh, man, I was trying to think of like a good zombie joke earlier today, and I just couldn't leverage my brain enough to like come up with it, to like put it together. I'm like, they're both zombie games, and
if you just put more emphasis on brain, it would have worked.
The part where I plug the fact that I you can still purchase such movies as Silent Horror and Resident Horror at xstrikestudios.com.
All right, next game to talk about is called Raging Justice, developed by Macon Games, published by Team 17, released May 8th on Xbox One, PS4, Switch, PC, Mac for $14.99. The city is in chaos with crime and corruption around every corner. It's all down to a team of hard-hitting, justice-seeking mavericks to clean up the streets with some tough justice. Raging Justice is a classic beat-em-up dragged kicking and screaming into the 21st century. Checking this one out, Jacob Garner, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay.
I don't care at all.
Oh, man. Come on. You don't think the listeners need to hear about how my account with Amazon got flagged for fraud?
Ooh.
And you had to save my ass just so I could get the friggin' Disney Afternoon collection? Because God forbid I should be able to play that, according to Amazon.
Okay, take a minute and tell us about your Amazon hassles, because I've had mine in the past as well. They're always fun.
Well, I had a temp job at a local college, and during the downtime while I was there, God forbid I have the audacity to order Mother's Day gifts for my wife.
You son of a bitch.
And while I'm at it, you know, Amazon's having their Xbox sale right now. And the only thing that I'm really after is the Disney Afternoon Collection, which was like, what, it was $8?
How dare you, sir?
Yeah, so I try to order it, and everything's going okay. And then, like, 3 hours later, I'm looking through, like, I'm looking over my Amazon stuff because I'm like, huh, usually they send some sort of, like, you know, oh, well, we shipped your crap, because my order really wasn't that, you know, crazy. And then I find out that they've canceled it because they think it's not me.
Scoundrels.
Which I'm just like, okay, that's weird. So I'm on with Amazon's customer service, and they're just like, oh, well, you know, it must be because you're at a different place. Just go ahead and put it on through again. So I do that, and it gets canceled immediately. Like, again, like every, like I had just done exactly what they told me to do, and they cancel it again because they think it's, I'm not who I say I am.
So, I'll tell you your mistake. You should have stayed on chat while you placed the order, and as soon as it got canceled, be like, hey, you guys just canceled it again. What's going on?
Well, hold on. It gets better. So later that evening, I'm on Amazon chat, and the guy's just like, oh, yeah, it's because you did it within, like, the five-hour window of, like, our fraud department telling you not to do it. And I'm like, when did the fraud department tell me not to do it? And he's like, well, you should have an email. And I'm like, I don't have any emails from you saying this.
The guy who stole your account got those emails, by the way.
Yeah, of course, of course. And so he's just like, all right, well, just try it again in the morning, because then you'll definitely be past, like, their little five-hour block or whatever. Mm-hmm. So at 7:45, which I'm supposed to leave for work at 8, I place the order again, and I get to work, and I've been informed it's been canceled once again. And not only that, my account is, will possibly get closed or locked for a period of time because I've ordered a sale item far too many times. A sale item that I have not received, cannot receive because they keep canceling my fucking order. And they're just like, well, if you think you've received this email in error, please write to us. And so I write, like, a very strongly worded email, you know, full of hitherto's and all that kind of stuff.
Dear sirs and or madams.
All right. Yeah. And so I don't hear shit from their fraud department again about this. But then later that day, I find out, oh, okay, part of your order has gone through, which I'm just like, oh, thank God, at least, like, the Mother's Day orders. And so I get in touch with Joe, and I'm just like, who? Dude, you.
Ah, yeah.
Yes, the hero of this story. Uh-huh. And I'm like, they're not letting me fucking have the Disney Afternoon thing. Would you please just buy it for me, and I'll pay you the money, which, of course, Joe did.
Then, like, because, 4 minutes later, before we even worked out an agreement, I'm just like, here, give me $8.50. And pasted a code, you right. Asshole.
Thank you. And so after I get that, I'm just like, great, that's fantastic. So within the next 24 hours, all of a sudden I get these emails from Amazon saying, your item has shipped. Your item has shipped. Your item has shipped. And I'm just like, oh, fuck. So all these items that fraud had, like, you know, oh, well, we're just gonna cancel your order, all of a sudden they're now just like, yeah, okay, all this shit can go through. So I'm now sitting on three orders of my wife's fucking Mother's Day gifts. They're all like, I'm staring at the fucking boxes right now. None of them have been opened.
Oh my God. How many Disney Afternoon codes are you sitting on?
Zero.
Oh, good.
Zero, because the little fucks would put everything, all the physical items through, but the digital ones, oh no, fuck this guy. He's not allowed to have any. I'm literally sitting on zero. When I look at my Amazon account for my canceled orders, there is three orders of this fucking Disney Afternoon thing. None of them are allowed to go through. They didn't even be like, yo, hey, do you still need this thing? No, fuck this guy. We're going to cancel his account with Amazon if he tries to order it again.
Well, I do agree with the whole fuck this guy thing.
Well, yeah, that's fair, but, yeah. You know.
So that was a really long, minute-long story.
Yeah, and now I'm going to have to send back two of these damn boxes on Monday.
Cool. So Raging Justice, developed by Macon Games, published by Team 17. I figure I should go through all the info again since you took so goddamn long with that story. But tell us about Raging Justice.
So it's a side-scrolling beat-em-up along the lines of Streets of Rage, Final Fight, any of those kind of games from way back in the day. And the best way to describe it is Streets of Rage with the graphics of a Robot Chicken episode. It looks phenomenal. Like, and it looked great on your TV. It looks great on my TV. I just can't get over, like, the character models. They're gorgeous. And it's just a very distinct look. And, I mean, it plays like the old Streets of Rage games, Streets of Rage, Final Fight, that kind of, that kind of beat 'em up look. It's got the same thing, except, as I said, it looks like it's out of Robot Chicken. The fights, it plays well. It plays great. One of the things I liked is that, you can actually toggle off the friendly fire, cause I know we were having that issue when we were playing over at your house.
Yeah, we were just beating the shit out of each other.
Actually, it was really just Joe beating the shit out of me.
Yeah.
Was
it intentional or not? We'll never know.
But it wasn't. Actually, yeah, I know. No, I think it was intentional because you're a dick. but anyways, one of the things that I really like about it is that each level has its own like missions. And so you have all the objectives that you need to be able to do. I mean, you still win whether, like, as long as you beat everybody across the screen, but you get bonuses, for doing certain things, like you arrest, certain people with outstanding warrants, you beat the level in such amount of time, like you use a certain weapon to defeat X amount of, bad guys, that kind of stuff, which I thought was really neat. And it certainly adds a new dimension to the gameplay, but, my only problem with it is that it seemed like some of it was random. Remember Mercenary Kings?
Mm-hmm.
How it seemed like you could just go through the level and you would never encounter some of the stuff that you were supposed to. I kind of felt that, when I was playing it, Raging Justice kind of had the same thing. I mean, it's entirely possible that I was just too busy kicking the shit out of people to notice certain things. But like when I was looking for like the people with warrants, they wouldn't be there, or it didn't seem like they were there. So I don't know if I was just, you know, as I said, if I was just too busy beating up on people to catch their names quick enough. But usually it would warn you if somebody had a warrant out for their arrest.
Yeah. They would show up on the screen with a red border flashing on them.
Right. And I remember one level that I was playing through it, like I had like four different people with warrants, but I only came across one of them. So yeah. So I don't know if that's a glitch or if that's like intentional. I don't know.
Just weren't paying attention. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's that too.
You can't even properly order a game off Amazon. So clearly there's issues with you.
God. Yeah. None of like the other three just don't show up and I get accused of fraud.
You fraudulently beat up the one. So I know the game is really awesome. We did an interview on the last episode. Did you have any negatives with the game? Because I thought it was really, really awesome. I thought the missions themselves, if anything, those might be a negative because some of them were so damn hard to actually accomplish. And then the whole arresting people thing, like I could never figure out the best way to beat someone up just enough to stun them so you could arrest them, but not kill them.
Yeah, that's that the whole mission thing and how random and at times difficult it seemed to be. That is a negative about it. It's a plus and a negative. It's because it's a really cool idea for it, but at the same time, it does seem random, possibly glitchy, possibly, you know, user error. The the other thing was, yeah, because when we were playing together, I know we definitely had issues trying to figure out, first off, just how to arrest people, because I don't remember the game actually explaining that. And it seemed to be like a random discovery by you on how to actually arrest people. But even
that,
then, like,
I'll be fair, that might have been because when I first started up the game by myself, it did have a tutorial at the very beginning. When we played together, it kind of skipped that because I already played it. So okay. It's a good chance that I'm the reason you didn't see the tutorial stuff if it never showed up when you played it.
Yeah, I don't have one because it just says continue.
All right, yeah, I fucked that up for you then. That's not fault of the game. That's on me. It does have a tutorial. The first time you play it, it does have a tutorial. Like, you have to press the B button to arrest people and, you know, picking up things and throwing them. So that shit is there. It's just I ruined it for you.
Joe fucked something up again. Way to go.
Hey, where'd you get your game code?
Through you.
Yeah, goddamn right.
So yeah. Oh crud. The
I took away your negative.
Well, we were discussing like the randomness of that and the arresting thing. Yeah, so it doesn't really make it clear how to do it. With the arresting thing, usually there is an objective for how many people you are supposed to arrest. And so if, you know, the game doesn't exactly make clear what's the best way to make arresting people happen, or if that's just a random thing in itself, then, you know, it makes it one of the objectives hard to do. Yeah. So, you know, that is a negative as well. But it's something I can see being easily improved upon with like a game update. So
yeah,
it's not game breaking. It's just, you know, relatively annoying.
Yeah. So but minor hiccups aside, $15 on this one. What do you think?
Holy crap. Buy it.
I didn't even get to finish asking and you're saying buy it.
Yeah. Well, it's cause it's a great freaking game. Like, I've been excited for this thing cause I think, did you know about it before I was like begging you for us to review it?
Yes.
Oh, you didn't? Okay, well, fuck you.
I know everything.
Fair, but...
I get press emails.
Oh, well, you know, I saw Facebook ads for this thing, and I was just super psyched about it. I was like, Joe, please, I want to review this thing for the podcast. And he was like, I guess.
If it'll shut your bitch ass up.
And so, yeah, like, I've been excited since I first saw the videos for it, and it's, you know... It meets the hype. Like, I'm really excited about it. I've been recommending it to my friends that I used to play Streets of Rage with back in college. So, hopefully they're all going to buy it as well. But if you're a big fan of Final Fight, Streets of Rage, Golden Axe, those kinds of games, holy crap, buy this thing. Like, cool. You will not be disappointed.
I know I'm not disappointed. I'm having a blast with the game. I definitely agree. $15. If you enjoy the visual style, I've been saying I think this is going to be like a love it or hate it kind of visual style. If you dig it, you're going to love this game.
Yeah, and I think it's on sale this week. I think it's like a 10% off the $15 just for launch week. So
yeah, chop.
Yeah, so you could save those pennies and buy Disney Afternoon Collection and have your, you know, account, you know, marked for fraud.
Oh, God. We could only hope. Well, Jacob, always good having you on chatting about this stuff. Do you have any final thoughts to sum it up?
No, not really. I'm just going to go back to bed.
All right, back to us. Next game to talk about is called Rocket Wars, developed by Archon Interactive, published by Rooftop Panda, released May 9th on Xbox One, PS4, Steam, and Windows 10 for $14.99. Rocket Wars is a fast-paced local multiplayer game for up to 4 players. Game features crazy weapons, lots of power-ups, and several game modes. Rocket Wars is designed to be a party game you could play with any of your friends when you hang out and need to determine who is superior. Cole, tell us about this one.
I mean, you kind of did it, and I'm done here, so cool. Bye.
So for 15... What is this game?
Okay. So this game is exactly everything you said. There isn't any kind of story to go through. There's no single player aspect of it. It's just a party game. It's very simplistic. You have a circle, which is your battle arena, and there is a sun in the middle, and you do have to deal with gravitational pull on these ships trying to pull you into that sun. Meanwhile, you are fighting with up to four players in the arena at once, so yourself and three friends or three AI or any combination thereof. I played it exclusively with AI because nobody would play with me this time, and I was sad.
You have family members.
I know it, and they were all like, "No, we're busy. We don't want to play this one." I was like, "Okay, well, bye."
Then you know what? When it was dinner time, you should have been like, "Oh, I would have made dinner, but it's so busy, and I have things to do."
You're on your own today. Enjoy your viney weenies.
Anyway.
But I did play it mostly solo against AI, and I still had a lot of fun. You can set it up if you only want to deal with one AI. You can do that. You can set it up for three AI.
Oh, shit.
AI,
hold on. The price have is incredibly wrong on this.
It did sound incredibly high for this.
Yeah, I'm looking at this. Why the fuck do my notes say $14.99? All right, real quick correction. This game is $7.99, not $14.99. I don't know where the hell my price came from. So
you wrote down the various price for Rocket Wars.
Fuck, it could have been for all I know. Apologies to the devs and publisher on that. The game is $7.99, not $14.99. Continue on. I apologize.
Good job, Joe. There are multiple game modes. There is Deathmatch, which can also be played as Team Deathmatch. There's Survivor, Nuke King. There's also Free Play. Basically, Deathmatch is exactly what it sounds like. You just go at it and see who can get the most kills. But Survivor is unique in that it's every player has 5 lives. And the goal is to just destroy each other as quickly as possible. And you are just 4 people if you're playing with all AI and yourself or people or whatever you're doing. The ships are in the orbit around the sun, bounce into the sun. You're going to get wrecked, so be careful. Try to bounce your enemies into the sun or use your basic ammo, which you have an infinite supply of. You can just shoot all your little heart once. Or pick up power-ups to take out your friends or foes very quickly. You can pick up everything from lasers to shotguns to sniper rifles to a nuke. Yeah, I said it, a nuke. You can nuke your friends, and it's
sweet.
Fun. And if you don't got friends, nuke the AI like I did. When you pick up a nuke power-up, it activates it automatically, and there is a nuke countdown. If an enemy can kill you before that nuke countdown reaches zero, the nuke is stopped. But if that countdown makes it all the way, everybody dies but you.
Oh.
It's brilliant, and I love it, which leads me to Nuke King, which is even better than playing Survivor and getting the nuke and pissing everybody off. Nuke King is kind of a King of the Hill variant, in which the person to get the most points first, which is basically whoever gets first blood, then becomes the new king, and their ship is enlarged dramatically. So you're kind of an easier target, and you're not allowed to pick up power-ups, but the nuke countdown timer is going. So you can kill everybody else, and your timer reaches zero, then you win, you nuke the game. But if somebody else kills you, they reset your timer, they become the nuke king, they become the large target, and you've got to kill them before they get to the timer to zero. Whoever ultimately reaches zero with the nuke wins. So it was a pretty creative mode, and I enjoyed it a lot. Free Play is really just good for like learning the basic controls and figuring shit out.
And fucking around.
Yeah, it's really good, like a tutorial. And then once you've got it figured out, go play one of the real modes. There aren't any different maps. There's no way for the world to change. power-ups are your biggest game changer here. This is fine for like a good quick, you know, 30-45 minutes if number one was having a sleepover and wanted something all of her buddies could play at once. I'd be like, here's some batteries and controllers and go play Rocket Wars and blow each other up. One of the best things is that in the corner there's an obit feed too, and like if you kill yourself it will say something silly like Blue needs an adult or Blue nice. Has made a mistake. Okay. Oh, they're so good. Like the obit feed is so salty. And it'll say, you know, just some of the best stuff. Like, the game is worth $8 alone just for that obit feed.
Well, I guess that answers my question. For $8, what's your verdict?
I do give it a buy it. I had a lot of fun. I'm going to pester my husband at some point to help me play so that I can get the rest of the achievements that I couldn't do by myself.
Oh, boy. You and your achievements. But next game to talk about is called Killing Floor Incursion, developed and published by Tripwire Interactive, released May 1st on PlayStation VR for $29.99. Killing Floor Incursion is a fully realized multi-hour story-driven adventure with an additional endless mode. In solo or co-op mode, travel diverse environments from creepy farmhouses to the catacombs of Paris in order to uncover who or what is behind the Zed menace. This game was a very, very pleasant surprise to me. When I got this in, I read the description, and even still, I kind of figured this was going to be like a level-based, do a wave of enemies coming at you, move on, do a wave of enemies, move on. I didn't realize this was going to be like a full-on explore areas, run around areas. Because it's PlayStation VR, there is no true free locomotion to this. It is like teleport from one area to another, turn around using the buttons on the PlayStation Move controllers, shoot Zeds, punch Zeds, slash them, do whatever you got to do to just not die in this game. And this game is tense. I streamed part of my time with the game earlier on Twitch, and oh man, like I was jumping at some points. I would turn around and there'd just be an enemy right in my face without me having realized it, despite having, you know, surround sound headphones on while I'm playing. So I heard them. I just didn't know that they were like right on my ass, as I'm sure, Cole, you could attest by the numerous times I jumped, like, oh, motherfucker, where did that guy come from?
Number three was running around. I just had to randomly like reach over and keep knocking the volume down because you'd shout out when something got you. And I was like, kid in the room. Yeah.
See, you should have messaged me and said, like, hey, watch the language. I would have been like, I don't give a fuck. That scared the shit out of me.
I don't give a fuck either. I don't even curb my own language. So
that's horrible to do. That's just fucked up. How the fuck could you do shit like that? But,
fuck it.
Anyway, this is like a true legitimate story mode to the game. You start off, you know, at the beginning point of a level, and it's not just a wave of enemies come at you. You have to teleport through these areas, down these pathways, find either health or weapon or ammo pickups along the way. You could find grenades as well. Take out enemies as they come at you. It's not always going to be like a wave of enemies is coming. Like, there'll just be enemies pop up that you're going to have to take out as you're going through. Tracking in the game for the most part seemed pretty solid. Shooting enemies, I thought, was, you know, fairly intuitive. There's no laser sight on the gun, so you are going to have to actually aim at things, which isn't that bad of a deal. It seems to be pretty forgiving with aiming, where I would get headshots when I didn't think I was anywhere close to them. So the game is pretty forgiving in that respect. Attaching and removing weapons from your body, I had a significant issue with, and it might just be because I'm a fatty fat, but you have a holster where your guns are on the front of your body. You also have a flashlight on the front of your body. And then you have knives or longer weapons like shotguns that you could keep behind you that, you know, if you're familiar with Leonardo from the Ninja Turtles, you would just reach behind you and grab them. I couldn't get these fucking knives or these guns to stay attached to me when I put them on for the life of me. Constantly, I would put the controller next to me and let go of the button so it would attach to me and it would just fall on the ground. I would look down, I would look and stare, and I would see that it's highlighted, and I would let go of the button, and it would drop to the fucking ground. And I don't know if that's an issue with the game, or if it's an issue with the PlayStation VR tracking, which I've gone into many times how the tracking with the PSVR is kind of shit, or if it's just because I'm a fatty fat fat. But I couldn't get these weapons to stay attached to me for the life of me. Thankfully, if you drop them on the ground, a couple of seconds later, they will automatically teleport back to your person. But it was still frustrating when I would try to reach for a gun that wasn't there because I had to drop it on the ground because it wouldn't stick to me, when I tried to grab a knife or pick up a grenade or something. And it you know, it got a little bit frustrating. Another bit of frustration is pretty much due to the movement. When you move somewhere, you have to teleport from area to area, which, okay, I've done that in a lot of VR games. The issue is, once you teleport somewhere, they have whatever their system in the game is to prevent you from going insane, is you can't just rapidly teleport from place to place. You have to let it kind of recharge. So if you teleport somewhere and then you immediately try to teleport again, you'll see the circle where you could teleport just slowly move forward, as in like, oh, well, it's recharging, so I can go here or there or there. And you have to wait, which, you know, when you're exploring isn't that big of a deal, but when there's a shitload of enemies coming after you and you got to get the fuck out of the way, you can't always just get the fuck out of the way when you really, really need to.
Yeah.
On the bright side, there is an endless mode to the game, where it just kind of drops you an arena. You just take out Zeds as they come at you. My score in that was pitiful. I looked at like the top scores and they were like 43,000, shit like that. I think I had like 180, something ridiculous. I played it a few more times and I couldn't even match that score. that's how bad I am. A lot of that comes down to my last big gripe with this game, and that is the complexity of the controls. The game requires two move controllers, so you're going to have those. Each of the face buttons on each of the controllers has different commands, whether one is to open up the little wrist pop-up thing that helps you find, you know, track down weapons, or you could go back to the main menu, check settings, stuff like that. Certain buttons are to pick up weapons, other buttons are to put down weapons, another button is to change how you're holding a knife from, you know, holding it like you're going to slash to hold it that you're going to throw it. Another button is to obviously pull the trigger, another button is to teleport, but only on the one controller. You could turn left and right, but only on the other controller. In the heat of the moment when you're trying to get shit done, it is very, very easy to hit the wrong things and have it cost you big time.
It sounds like VR version of tank controls.
Kind of, but you know, VR games, they have a learning curve to begin with when it comes to games like this. I would imagine people who've played a lot of VR stuff and routinely play games with a more open style of exploration instead of, you know, stationary shooting galleries, I'd imagine they would get the hang of it. As I played it more, I got the hang of it quicker and easier. But when you're first starting out, there is a definite learning curve to remembering which buttons do which. And instead of going to grab and pick up a gun, where you instead teleport halfway across the room behind you for some reason. Best of all, there is co-op, online co-op, so if you don't want to play by yourself, just jump online, find a rando to play with, and have some fun. I did a couple of arena games with randoms, and those were really fun. I sucked, I drug them down, I felt horrible, but I still laughed the entire time. $30 on this one, I'm honestly surprised it's this cheap.
Wow.
Killing Floor itself is a $40 game, so I was expecting a VR version to be equal, if not more. But for what's there, $30 on this one with the full-sized campaign, the online co-op, the arena shooter, it's absolutely buy it. This is probably one of the highlights of VR that I've played on the show. Despite all the gripes I have with it, a lot of it comes down to probably me being a fatty fat fat, and then just learning the intricacies of the controls in the game, but it is definitely worth picking up for $30.
Nice.
one final game to talk about tonight is called Through the Woods, developed by Antagonist, published by 1C Company. It released May 2nd on Xbox One, May 8th on PS4 for $19.99. Through the Woods is a third-person Norse horror adventure. Oh, now I see why you wanted to cover this one. Horror. Set in a forest on the western shores of Norway that tells the story of a mother and her missing son. Cole, tell us about it.
So I was originally supposed to review Through the Woods on Steam a while ago, and I couldn't get my PC to run it because it's a stack of shit. And so since I played it on Xbox, I'm really excited to come to Xbox, and I just wanted to talk about it. It is basically like you explained. We start off the game. We meet Espen, who is a younger boy. Not quite a teenager. He's in that tween years. And his mother, who we never learn the name of. Her name is just Mother. they are
Mama.
On an island in Norway, and they're at this cabin. The mother works very hard. She's very honest in the beginning in her narration. She explains that, you know, when her son was born, she didn't love him. She had to grow to love him. It was not a love at first sight thing. She didn't even like the kid. Which is kind of an honest take in a game about motherhood that we don't typically see. And so I was kind of intrigued by that. She explains that she works long hours. She says that her husband did something and hurt her and hurt Espen, and they were no longer together. And so there's this huge air of mystery set up about, you know, what's happened to lead them to this place where she is a single mother with this young boy in the woods. You know, she complains that she has to work long hours and Espen's not happy because she works into the night and therefore has to sleep during the day and they don't get to spend a lot of time together. So they're in the woods, they're bonding, but she does have to work. The next morning, after all of this is set up, Espen is kidnapped while on the pier next to the house. And so, being the mother, she goes after her son. And the entire journey of the game is going through the woods and experiencing the fears of what's actually in the woods, as well as seeing it blended with Norwegian folklore.
Oh, nice.
So we have intense stories of battling trolls and mysterious, you know, beings who kidnap children, and it's all folded in and filled out in the game with pieces of lore that are littered about the world that you have to find. So this does take on a walk-sploration kind of aspect.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some survival moments where you do have to use stealth, or you have to use the only tool that the mother has to her available to her, which is a flashlight, in order to overcome some screeching beasts who will scare the ever-loving shit out of you.
That gets to my first question. How much fear pee was there?
I want to be really honest. I played the game first, and I wasn't really that scared. I got through the whole game fine. But there's an achievement for dying to every one of the beasts that you can encounter in the game.
Oh, man.
And so I had to go back. And thank goodness that the game has chapter select. This is one of the best things ever. When you present me with a horror game where I've got to walk around and find shit, and there are a ton of collectibles, and there's no chapter select, that's just cruel. So this game thankfully has chapter select. Not only does it have good chapter select, it has good chapter select where you can go in and choose the bit of the chapter that you need to replay.
Nice.
And so I had started it up in order to get killed by this beast that I knew was in the area, but I had played it so long before that I kind of forgot where it spawned at. And so I'm just like casually walking along thinking I've got a few minutes until I can have to encounter it. And then I can just set the controller down and let it kill me. And then it jumps out from behind me and eats me. And I, there was fear pee.
Yes.
And I was at, so the terrible part was that the fear pee happened on the replay when I should have been prepared. It's not all, you know, fantastic. The game looks great. And for the most part, it plays really well because it's mostly just walking and interacting with objects and finding collectibles and not dying. which, you know, it's simple enough. But there, there's one major standout that is a pain in the ass, in that you have to collect everything in the game if you want all the achievements, and if you just want to experience the whole story, which is kind of the point. There is one section of the game where you are in this cabin, and there is a cabin out back that has a collectible inside of it that you need to get to. Even if you don't know that there's a collectible inside of it, there's a building with a lock, and it's a game. You want in that door. So you have to find the combination in the cabin. If you could pick up all of the collectibles that are around it, but there's a piece of paper on the desk with the combination for that lock. That's a collectible that you need to pick up to complete the game.
Oh, man.
And you can't interact with it. It's glitched.
Now, oh, man.
For the grace of all that shines in the sky, you can maneuver the camera around to read the numbers if you've got a big enough TV, which is what I did. And I was able to get the lock open, but I don't have the completion in the game because of that one collectible.
Man, that's so shit. Hopefully that's something that's being worked on at least.
I do know that it has been passed on to the devs, but it is just, you know, a shame that even if you're not going for the achievement, if you're just one of those people that wants to collect everything, or you're not able to see those numbers and don't have access at the time to Google or whatever to somebody to tell you what those numbers are, you could get stuck and not be able to progress, which is a shame because the rest of the game is really good. And the ending isn't scary. The game does take more of like a psychological thriller aspect, which I have mentioned a million times on this show is my favorite. Mm-hmm. I love games and stories that will just fuck your brain. And this does. And the ending just left me sitting there with my jaw on the floor like, that happened. That's a thing. That's where this goes. It was a really satisfying payoff. And
that's where that goes.
That's where it goes. And then, it's true. It's just like, you just like, shit.
Well, between the shock and awe and the fear pee, minus the one little issue with the collectible, $20 on this one. What do you think?
I give it a butt. I really enjoyed it. I was expecting to like it, but I didn't realize I was going to like it that well.
You've had a lot of good games this episode.
I did. I'm really happy. I'm really happy I didn't have to be mean to anybody.
Good to hear. It's always good when we have an episode that neither of us hate anything that we played. I know Tim wasn't a big fan of Garage, but, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah, it's...
Sometimes you can't say, you weren't here for that one.
I was agreeing in general. Just that sometimes it gets tiring to be the bitch that has to be like, no, this game wasn't that great. You know?
Yeah, it's save those nice for XGR. Say, you know,
today I enjoyed all my shit and I'm happy. I had a good week playing games and got to play shit I enjoyed.
Good stuff. Good games, good guest on the show. I'd say this was a successful episode of the SML podcast. And even better news is I got the email earlier today that my t-shirts are being shipped out. So I should have my very own SML podcast t-shirt in a couple of days.
Hooray!
And then you'll have one a couple of days later.
Yeah, I gotta pay you.
And then everyone else listening probably won't have one because I posted on Twitter about it and nobody replied.
That's so, Twitter.
Yeah, what are you going to do? But that is it for this episode. Thank you again to Grant for dropping by and chatting and all our buddies that came on to do some reviews. Cole, do you have any final words to end this show and send us home?
Not today, I don't.
Helpful. Very, very helpful.
See, I didn't even add anything after the fact. I didn't say no and then something else. I just said no, I don't.